Good morning and welcome to the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. This morning, we're delighted to have as our guest, His Excellency Bishop Richard F. Sticca, the new bishop of the Diocese of Knoxville, the third in its history. Good morning, Bishop Sticca.
Good morning, Frank. It's a great pleasure to be here.
I'm digging your middle name.
Oh, Frank?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was my father's name, and I haven't used it much in the past. I usually go with the middle initial F, but to honor my dad, I use it more, I guess. Now.
Especially at your recent ordination, which was a big ceremony at the Knoxville Convention Center.
It was. I told a number of people that Knoxville was at its best in terms of the diocese, in terms of the whole community at large. We had over 5,000 people at the Mass and visitors from even Africa, so it was a great time.
How does that compare to one of the big ordinations? Let me get all Catholic for just a minute. There's a big ordination coming up in New York City.
Right. A good friend of mine, Archbishop Dolan from St. Louis.
He was at your event.
Yeah, well, he's from St. Louis originally. We worked together.
And so he was there. Are you going to go to his ordination?
I am.
Not ordination, because he's already ordained.
Yeah, installation, April 15th, tax day.
Okay. Now, but that'll be in their cathedral. It's the famous
Correct.
St. Patrick's Cathedral.
Right.
I think there might have been more people at yours in the convention center.
Well, you know, when you have a diocese with a smaller cathedral, many times that they'll have these at the convention center, which then allows you not to make it a ticket-only operation, but open to the public. And so that's why I think it was. And if you look at the staging, it looked like it was a church.
Yeah, where did they get all that material?
You
had the altar, you had the new chair.
Well, some of the material, the altar and the chair and the crucifix came from our parishes. The chair was new, donated by one of my parishioners in St. Louis.
That's your official cathedra, your bishop's chair?
Yeah. The word cathedral comes from the Latin, which means chair, and the chair represents the authority of the bishop or the connection to the local see.
Okay. So that's going to be your new chair. You're going to keep that one now and move it into the cathedral here in Knoxville at Sacred Heart?
Yeah, eventually. Right now it's at the chancery, but my intention is to move it there.
Okay.
It's quite comfortable and heavy.
And the backdrop was a cloth at your ordination that made it look like stained glass windows. It was almost like a TV set or a movie set.
Yeah, they work with a company that does staging for conventions and for meetings. And Deacon Sean Smith and the committee was able to obtain that. And if you looked at when it was a tight shot on the film, and it did look like a cathedral.
Yeah, it looked like we were in a church.
Yeah, it was very impressive. The nuncio, who's the Vatican ambassador to the United States, said Knoxville's installation could have rivaled anyone in the country.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it was quite a credit to the people.
Now, one of the things I noticed at your ordination was that you invited people from outside the Catholic realm. Obviously, the
Correct.
Mayor of Knoxville, the mayor of Knox County were there, and a lot of members of the interfaith community. So on this Palm Sunday, let's talk about your goal, your relationship with people of other faiths besides Catholic.
Yeah, I think it's important for all the different churches, whatever their background might be, to work together. You know, because we each play a role in our own communities, our own faith communities, but those faith communities also represent Knoxville. So anything we can do to help the city, the state, the community that surrounds us, I think is important. I've always had a history in St. Louis of working with different faith communities, and I grew up in a kind of a political situation with different friends who are in politics in St. Louis, so I'm very comfortable working with other churches as well as working with government officials.
And one of my parish priests told me that the two rabbis you invited were especially moved. Did you contact them directly, or how did that work?
Yeah, I phoned the three rabbis maybe 2 or 3 weeks prior just to have a conversation. We're eventually going to have dinner, and I'll be contacting different other leaders of faith traditions.
Now, Knoxville was in the news last summer for bad reasons when there was a shooting at our Universalist Unitarian Church.
Right.
Similarly, in suburban St. Louis, there was a shooting just probably right before you left, the time you were moving here to Knoxville.
A minister was killed.
And both of those were kind of really unsettling and scary. And I noticed the security was fairly tight at your ordination.
Right.
I mean, what, as a leader of a faith community, how are you affected by that? How is your community affected by that?
Well, I think, you know, there is a great deal of violence that surrounds us at various times. We have to be vigilant. But as the head of the local church here in Knoxville, the Catholic Church, I can't allow it to hinder my reaching out to people. You know, you have to kind of play smart, but it just can't hinder what you do in terms of a leader.
We're talking with Bishop Richard Sticca, the new Bishop of Knoxville, Catholic Diocese of Knoxville. The third one. This is a young diocese and was rated the most vibrant by a magazine about a year ago.
Correct. Yeah, we're just getting ready to observe our 21st anniversary. So I told the nuncio that I hope to stay here until death, which is a long time away, I hope. So the diocese is growing. You know, it's a gem. and I feel most blessed to be here.
What is it that makes a diocese vibrant? What is it that makes sets Knoxville apart from some diocese in the Northeast, let's say?
Well, I think the tone of the people, the desire for people in the diocese to know Christ, to be to know their faith tradition. I think the importance also of the local clergy, you know, the catechists, the teachers, those who celebrate the sacraments, the leadership, mm-hmm. and also my role as bishop. So it involves so much, but basically it comes down to people who wish to know God.
Are we getting more immigrants from the other parts of the country, you know, people from the Northeast moving here to retire, or converts, people who are other Christian faiths or non-Christian converting to Catholicism?
I think it's a balance of movement of people from other parts of the nation. We have a large Hispanic population, which is a gift to this church with their culture, as well as people who are of other faith traditions or maybe no tradition, mm-hmm. Who have a desire and a willingness to become Catholic.
You announced at your ordination, Bishop Sticca, that you're learning Spanish.
I think next week or the following week, I'm going to do 3 days a week, an hour a day. So I'm back to school. Back to school.
And how important is it as the bishop to preach in Spanish? You said that by the end of the year you would be.
Yeah, for me, it's one of the top priorities. In order to be able to minister to people, you have to know the culture. Now, I know a bit of the culture of the various Hispanic cultures from South America, Central America, and the United States. But it's important to be able to have the conversation. And so that's mm-hmm. what my pledge to the people of this diocese is, to learn Spanish.
So we could probably see more Spanish language masses as the population grows here.
Well, we have a number of Spanish masses throughout the diocese, the cathedral, many parishes. I just mm-hmm. hope to be able to celebrate them, as well as to preach and have conversations.
How often do you say Mass at the cathedral versus is it about 60 parishes throughout the diocese?
Correct, 60 parishes. Since I've only been here a little bit over a week, my intent is to be there at least once a week to say Masses for the children. Mm-hmm. Sundays I'll be visiting different parishes. If whatever my schedule dictates, if that's not possible, then I have a nice chapel also at my residence.
Okay.
But it's not the same. It's always nice to say Mass with people.
Right. Because, I mean, part of your thing, that is, you want to go be the guest, the visiting priest, I guess.
Correct.
Because
according
churches.
To Catholic theology, I'm the pastor of the diocese,
uh-huh.
As well as the pastor of the cathedral, but of the diocese. And so I need to know my people.
Bishop Sticca, what is on your resume? How did you get the gig? I mean, it seems like you got mm-hmm. a great job. You know, I mean, they've made you bishop of the most vibrant diocese in the country. And before that, they made you pastor of a pretty good parish in St. Louis. So obviously you're doing something right.
Well, my intent, I entered the seminary after college. I went to St. Louis University, started out as a pre-med, finished with a business degree. My intent was always to work in a parish, never hopefully to do administration. My first 5 years of parish life was just that, as a priest. I did parish work, and since then I've been doing specialized ministry. So I've worked in youth groups. With youth groups, I worked in the vocation office. Eventually, I became the secretary to the Archbishop, Chancellor, Vicar General. So I have a good administrative background, and I have a good pastoral background. The last 4 years, I've been a pastor of a parish in St. Louis, following a priest who was sick with leukemia and who died, and there was an opening. I had a desire to be a pastor, so it just was mm-hmm. a perfect fit. So I saw that working in a diocese, both from the office, you know, from the chancery, as well as from the role as a pastor, so I have a good balance, I think.
And it was in your chancery job in St. Louis that you got good reviews for the work you did to deal with a crisis that the church faced these past couple of years, the abuse scandal.
Yeah, the abuse scandal was one of the most tragic situations I've had to deal with, because it just showed that sometimes sin could be in those places where you least think it would be. It's been a learning experience and will continue to be. But again, I have the ability to work with people and to be open to people, and I think that was helpful.
Well, how can you take that experience from St. Louis and apply it to Knoxville? Because really the question today is, for those of us who don't know you yet mm-hmm. in Knoxville, you know, what are we going to learn from your past that'll teach us here in the present?
I think I have a desire to be open to people, to listen. I think I can't be talking at people all the time, but, you know, part of my position as bishop is to listen mm-hmm. and to make decisions. And I think I'm very pastoral in terms of that ability to listen to people and to try to come to some understanding.
We're talking with Bishop Richard Sticca of the Catholic Church, the Catholic Diocese of Knoxville. What is the mission of the Knoxville Diocese outside the Catholic faith? You know, forget Catholic for a minute, and let's mm-hmm. just go Knoxville. Let's go East Tennessee. What is the mission of you and of the church, and well, Catholic Charities probably folds into this as well?
Right. You know, and I've said this constantly in my years as a pastor and my time here in Knoxville so far, the role of the Catholic Church is to be the face of Jesus to all that we meet, not just the Catholics, not just the Christians, but to all people that we meet. You know, take the teachings of Jesus, you know, whatever you do to the least of my brothers and sisters, for instance, to take all the teachings of Jesus and not allow them just to be teachings, but actually to be articulated in how we choose to live life. You know, so I think that's a challenge for all of us. It's easy to say you believe. It's easy to say that you're a Christian or a Catholic. You know, when push comes to shove, if you live it, that's when you actually are.
Mm-hmm.
So with Catholic Charities, with education, with working with the sick, the aged, the people who seem lost in the world, you know, there's issues with housing and food and dealing with people who just feel like they're disconnected to once again to invite them, you know, sometimes back into society. So there's a whole gamut of things.
And that's one thing that I've noticed I've lived in Tennessee now coming up on 7 years.
Okay.
And I've noticed that it's not just a church thing, it's a community thing. For example, the whole community rallied a couple of days before your ordination to raise money for the Mobile Meals Program.
Okay.
Which is a, you know, Meals on Wheels type
program.
For senior citizens. The county budget was, I think, $120,000 short. We did a radiothon, telethon on every station. And raise not only that, but another $50,000 on top of that.
Yeah, I think our faith, whatever faith we belong to, whatever tradition, should be a springboard in terms of working with the greater community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think if we're authentic in what we say or who we say we are, by living that out is actually who we are.
Well, how much of that involves you meeting with mayors and governors and politicians versus your parish priests? You're sending them out to do it.
Yeah, I mean, if my position as bishop allows me to get into doors that maybe not normally would occur, I'm just going to bring what I believe to be the teachings of the church and the needs of the community to those who are willing to listen. And sometimes they might not be willing to listen.
Well, I mean, you have an opportunity.
I'm not shy about these kind of issues.
There's a couple of East Tennesseans who are running for governor. So, you
correct.
Know, there's an opening, perhaps, if one of them were to be elected.
Yeah. My goal is to engage and to be engaged by the government officials and by the community at large. Mm-hmm. Back in St. Louis, I had the privilege of, I grew up with the mayor of the city of St. Louis. We were two houses apart. And so we've had conversations and I've never been shy in terms of working with people.
And there is something about St. Louis right now. I mean, I've read it on the internet referred to as the Rome of the West.
Rome of the West.
And you probably know where I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why is St. Louis such a hotbed of Catholicism? And I mean, you could feel it when you drive there. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I could feel it in the days after Christmas when we were there and the Christmas trees are all still lit up, as
right.
opposed to other parts of the country here where a lot of the stuff comes down on the 26th.
Yeah. St. Louis, well, it's 20. The greater community is 24% Catholic. So,
okay.
And that's historic because of the settlement, you know, Lewis and Clark and the, you know, the Spanish and the English and the French. St. Louis is a very strong community. Now, when you get away from the city, the Catholic faith is less of a percentage, but Catholicism, they have a very large school system, parochial school system, the hospitals, the academic institutions. It's just a strong feel. It's interesting in St. Louis, if you ask anybody, Catholic or non-Catholic, what part of the city they're from, you don't say what part of the city you're from. They'll say, what parish are you at?
Okay.
You know, and people, Catholic and non-Catholic, identify with the parish.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a bizarre thing.
Well, I noticed even the, to talk about St. Louis for a moment, the newspaper and the TV stations will run listings of all of the fish fries on Friday nights, mostly at Catholic churches.
Right, right.
During Lent. I wonder, are you going to maybe make the fish fry a big deal here in Knoxville, or are we going to all become toasted ravioli fans?
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with toasted ravioli. I was at the fish fry at Sacred Heart last Friday and enjoyed myself. You know, again, those are just, it's not just about faith and worship in church on a Sunday. It's about all these other community things. And I invite everybody to come to the fish fries. So they're good.
Catholic or non.
Catholic or not. You know, if you like fish, come on down.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're talking with Bishop Sticca about the Diocese of Knoxville. The MetroPulse, not the one currently, but the last week's, had a cover story about the new building at St. John Newman in Farragut.
Right. I just read the article this morning.
Yeah. So you're familiar with what I'm talking about.
Right, right.
It's, again, the St. Louis connection is there yet again because the pastor at St. John Newman was inspired by the beautiful Cathedral Basilica. Your old stomping grounds.
Yeah,
in
my
St.
old
Louis.
Stomping grounds.
When he was saying, well, I want this round part here and mm-hmm. I want this cross-shaped church here, some of those basic architectural things were inspired by the St. Louis building. What's your opinion of the new St. John Newman's? Have you had a chance to be inside it yet?
Well, I was there in January, so I haven't seen the additions, the fine-tuning of the church since then.
Uh-huh.
But I think a church should inspire. I mean, when you walk into a church, you should feel the presence of God in a dramatic way. And the old traditional churches, I think, do that more than some of the modern architecture. Mm-hmm. Not to knock modern architecture, but I just think the traditional churches inspire. And you're surrounded. Stained glass windows can be teaching moments. You can see Old Testament, New Testament in the stained glass windows, the saints. You know, the focus on the sanctuary, the focus on the tabernacle, what we believe to be the presence of Jesus Christ, you know. You know, St. John's, you know, with the frescoes and the ceilings and the dome, to me, it just gives a sense of the heavens. And so it's a beautiful church.
I was impressed by the way the pastor there bought some old mosaic Stations of the Cross, which is the scenes from actually this, what we celebrate this week, the Passion Week of Jesus about to be crucified. He bought those from an old church that had closed down and been decommissioned. And then when he knew how wide they were, he told the architects, okay, I've got these things to hang under the windows that are however many inches. Make the windows that wide so that they'll fit.
Right. You know what? You know, some of the works of art that were in churches that have been closed, they've been bought up in different entities and they might be in storage. You know, and they're hard to reproduce because they were works of art done by craftsmen at the turn of the century, you know, with people coming from other nations. So sometimes it's easier to build a church around those works of art because it's easier to build mm-hmm. than to renovate. And so I'm glad that these things have been reused.
Now, one of the things that some of my fellow Catholics talked about when St. John Newman's opened up, it's just after Christmas, or just for Christmas, actually, this past year, was that it looks more like a cathedral than our actual cathedral.
Right.
But, of course, what makes a cathedral is not the shape of the building, but the presence of the bishop and his chair.
Yeah, in theory, the cathedral is the parish of the bishop. It's mm-hmm. the mother church of the diocese.
So it doesn't matter what the building looks like at all.
No, because it's the presence of the people. You know, when I first was appointed, I've had some people who have come up and said there's been conversation about eventually building a new cathedral for the diocese.
Or you moving out to Farragut.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I kind of like where the present cathedral is in terms of the dynamics.
It's walking distance from your office.
Well, it's walking distance from the office, but also, we have a Hispanic ministry there. There's a Vietnamese presence. There's mm-hmm. a Korean presence. It's an active parish, and it has a historical connection also. You know, there is a reason it was chosen. In fact, I was speaking with the Vicar General last night, who's been Vicar General since the very beginning, and he was telling
me... Who is that, Monsignor Menkel?
Yeah, Monsignor Menkel.
Okay.
And he was just telling me about how that was chosen to be the cathedral. Monsignor Menkel is the encyclopedia of the history of this diocese, and mm-hmm. he's a great treasure.
That brings to mind a question, and this is, again, a little bit of Catholic thing that I don't fully get. Is what is the meaning of Monsignor? What is the role of Monsignor? When I was a kid growing up in New York, mm-hmm. it seems like every parish had a Monsignor, and that was that's how you knew who the pastor was. In St. Louis, it seems like there's a lot of Monsignors, and that's how you know who the pastor was. Here in Knoxville, the only Monsignor I'm aware of is Monsignor Menkel.
Yeah.
And he was only recently named that. What is the significance of that title?
You know, in Catholic theology, you only have three components of really what it is, what ministry is. You have deacons, you have the priest, and then you have the bishop. And in theory, the deacons and the priests of the Diocese of Knoxville participate in my ministry because our theology believes that the bishop has the fullness of the priesthood. I was ordained a deacon, I was ordained a priest, and now I'm ordained a bishop. And for that, the others are titles. So Monsignor, you might have held a particular position. For me, it was Vicar General and Chancellor. It's a title. Mm-hmm. It doesn't elevate you in terms of ministry. The same thing for Archbishop. It's a title that shows that you have more jurisdiction.
Okay.
A cardinal is one of the advisors to the Pope. The cardinal is still a bishop. And actually, when the Pope is elected, he is not elected Pope. He's elected Bishop of Rome. So again, from the Acts of the Apostles, the role of the bishop.
Now, when you mentioned a cardinal, you've got a friend who's a cardinal who showed up in Knoxville for your ordination.
Right.
I think I counted one cardinal, 27 bishops and 3 archbishops or something along those lines?
We had a whole group. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just an honor again for the diocese. Cardinal Regali has been a friend. I was his assistant and worked with him very closely in St. Louis. And he's just a dear friend and very close to my family. He's now the Archbishop of Philadelphia.
And, The
Cardinal Archbishop.
So he gets to vote if there were to be another conclave.
Right, he voted in the last election.
Oh, he did, okay.
Yeah, I can't tell you who he voted for because it's secret, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so he's one of the leaders of the church, not only in the United States, but in the world. And I was just, we had Archbishop Dolan, who's soon to be the Archbishop of New York, and some other archbishops. And yeah, it was just a real privilege. Some are very close friends and others are just brother bishops.
Yeah. We're talking with Bishop Richard Sticca, who is the newly ordained Bishop of Knoxville, the third in its history, about East Tennessee and his welcoming here. Now, we also mentioned briefly some of the issues that face our community. We talked about the church shootings at the beginning. We talked a little bit about the mission of Catholic Charities. Let's talk about education at a time when, you know, budgets are tight everywhere, and you'll find the government is trying to scrimp and save. What is the status of the Catholic school system in East Tennessee, and how does that apply to non-Catholics as well?
Yeah. Well, you know, the school system is small compared to some other dioceses, but it's strong and it's growing. I'm sure in the future we'll be opening schools in other parishes. You know, we have some regional schools. We have two very strong high schools in both in Knoxville and Chattanooga. So, you know, education is so important. It's been interesting recently. I've been reading how some school districts are cutting back. Maybe they're talking about 4 days a week instead of 5 days a week and adding some time on to save money. And then you look at the position of the United States in the world, and you know, each year it seems like other nations are passing us up in terms of the value of education. So I think our nation really needs to look to see, you know, are we going to fall behind, or are we going to be once again aggressive in terms of academic standards? And the same for the school system for the diocese. Provide quality and excellent educational possibilities, the academic life, as well as Christian formation.
Regardless of whether you're Catholic or not, you can still go to Catholic school,
though.
But you're going to hear the Catholic message, but a lot of people want to go there.
You're going to hear the Catholic message, but in Catholic schools, our Christian faith is a part of everything. So you can bring it into the math lessons. You can bring it into geography or spelling.
Biology, even.
Yeah, biology, yeah. And as well. It's just the environment. It's a Christian environment, which I think is so important.
Mm-hmm. And what about now also an issue that we've talked about here on this program before, when Father Reagan Shriver was our guest? He was representing the East Tennessee Coalition to End Homelessness. That's been certainly a campaign of his as Director of Catholic Charities.
Right, right.
How does the church find a role there? Other churches have, you know, times when they go out and hand out sandwiches or just do events that that benefit the homeless.
Yeah.
And there's ministries for that.
You know, I think you can approach it in two ways. One is you can do the Band-Aid approach and basically feed people, and then but if you leave it at that, you're not helping people in terms of maybe elevating their need for.
So if you give a man a fish,
you know the old saying, you can teach him the fish, or you can give the person a fish.
Right.
You know, I think it's sad that anywhere in the world, but here in the United States, when we're so affluent and comfortable, that there are people without housing. You know, that there are people on the streets. You know, some have issues, you know, psychological issues or whatever. But they all need to be addressed. We have to be a welcoming people. Otherwise, you know, we betray, you know, what's on the Statue of Liberty, you know, mm-hmm. as people were welcomed into our nation in the past. So I think the challenge for the Catholic Church is not to forget our mission, again, which is the teachings of Jesus. You know, whatever you do to the least of my brothers and sisters, you do for me.
You briefly mentioned the economy there, and that's affecting everybody.
Right.
You talk about how we live in an affluent, comfortable nation, mm-hmm. but at times like this, sometimes it feels, you know, a little harder to make that contribution when the basket gets passed on Sunday morning.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've had the privilege of visiting Bolivia. I've been in Lebanon. I've been in 2 years ago, I was in Nigeria and Benin. You know, we have our challenges here, but if you compare some of our situations in the United States to other nations, and just talking to priests from around the world, we have a lot more potential of in terms of dealing with different issues. But the challenge, again, is we just can't forget about some of the basics of who we are as a people. And I think this last year, you know, so many people put their trust in blue chip stocks, for example, or mm-hmm. the biggest houses or cars that eventually rust or whatever. It just shows maybe we need to get back to our values. It's not just about possessions. It's about people. You know, and how we value people and how we value ourselves.
At your ordination, in the remarks at the end, you got a round of applause for mentioning the value of people and specifically the value of human life.
Right.
That didn't seem like any, it was no veil there. You were definitely making a statement to the political community
right.
at large.
Yeah, you know, Mother Teresa, Blessed Teresa of Calcutta once said that if a nation can kill its unborn, what worse thing can exist in a nation? You know, back with the whole issues of people's rights, you know, as, you know, the issue of slavery, the issue of women and the right to vote, all these different issues, talked about people that were denied basic rights. You know, a child in the womb is a creation of God? And how can we take away the right to life from someone that is so innocent? I mean, completely innocent, because a person thinks that they have the ability or the right to make the choice to deny someone life. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a real tragedy. And it just kind of shows, you know, our nation, some believe our nation's in decline. I don't believe that myself. But if we lose our moral foundation, who are we?
Bishop Richard Sticca is our guest this morning, and this is Palm Sunday, the beginning of Holy Week. The events at every Catholic church during Holy Week are a big deal. It's the biggest celebrations of the year. And of course, even anywhere in the Christian world, Easter Sunday is the the premier event, bigger even than Christmas.
Right. We know a lot of people believe that Christmas is the ultimate, you know, and we celebrate the birth of Jesus, but the gift of Jesus was his life. You know, he was born, but the gift was his life. And
he was also conceived as a fetus. You know, he could have, when you just made a connection to me when, with our previous comment, you know, he could have, Jesus could have come as a full grown man. He could have come as a warrior. He chose to come as a fetus.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's interesting about Palm Sunday and all the days of what we call Holy Week, mm-hmm. almost every day is a gift from God, from Jesus himself. You know, Palm Sunday, when we acknowledge, or they acknowledge, but we acknowledge, you know, his sense of the king, you know, mm-hmm. that, you know, even in the scripture readings. But on Holy Thursday, we as the Catholic community, we celebrate the Mass of the Chrism, or we celebrate that Tuesday, but it's within the context of Holy Week. You know, when we celebrate the priesthood, we celebrate people coming into the church.
And Thursday is the Last Supper
commemorated. The Mass of the Lord's Supper, in which Jesus said, you know, this is my body, this is my blood. The ultimate gift that Jesus gave, Good Friday, when he died on the cross. Father, it is finished. You know, and also his sense of, you know, forgive them, for they do not know what they do. And Holy Saturday for Catholics and Christians, when we celebrate the Easter Vigil, we celebrate the resurrection, the Easter Sunday. Those are all gifts from Jesus in terms of his humanity. And I think that's why Holy Week is so special, because it's about the gift of Jesus, the ultimate gift, his life.
And Holy Saturday, Easter Vigil, also when you bring the new recruits in.
Sure.
You know, which is a big deal in this area. The RCIA program, which is for adults who become Catholic, is very vibrant, if you use that word again, here in East Tennessee.
Yeah, and many of the people have been working for months and months, and sometimes years. They have a desire to be baptized or a desire to become Catholic, to become Christian. And so it's a spectacular night. It's a beautiful ceremony. It's unlike any other ceremony that we celebrate throughout the year. It begins with the church in darkness, and we light this candle that represents, you know, Jesus, the light of the world, the Paschal candle. And it's just a spectacular thing because, again, we do the readings from the scriptures.
If you're a newbie, is that a good one to show up to? You know, if you're curious about Catholicism, is that a good Mass to go to? It's 3 hours long.
Yeah, it's 3 hours long, but it's about the church. It's about resurrection. It's about the forgiveness of sins, about mercy, and it's about people becoming one with us. I mean, that's the mission of the church. Go, therefore, and baptize all nations.
All right, Bishop Richard Sticca has been our guest on this Palm Sunday morning. All right, I got the Catholics only speed round questions for you.
Sure.
All right, speed round. We've only got about a minute and a half left. Okay, bells at the consecration, yes or no?
Yes. I think it's one of those beautiful traditions of the past.
Okay, so that's a change at a lot of. But why did they go away at so many parishes?
Well, during the '60s, things evolved, and some people thought, you know, it was more for show. But to me, it just caused people to focus.
All right. What do we do with our hands during the Our Father? Do we hold them like this? Do we hold them like that? Do we hold hands with the person next to you?
I've seen all three. Mm-hmm. You know, the church hasn't really said one way or another. It's a communal thing, so I'm fine with opening hands.
Okay. After the gifts, when do we stand up? In the middle of the prayer, the beginning of the prayer, the end of the prayer? There's been some changes there.
Yeah, you know, and there are going to be changes in the next 2 years. I was just seeing some of the information. So, you know, we're fine-tuning. You know, if everything was the same, it mm-hmm. would be stagnant. But faith and worship is a vibrant, active thing. So it's evolving. How's that? Right. I know what I'm supposed to do.
Bishop Sticca, any final words on this Palm Sunday? Maybe a blessing.
To my Christian brothers and sisters of whatever faith tradition, I just wish them a very holy and special Holy Week. I pray it's a time when they continually discover Jesus and a blessed Easter. To those who are not Christian, I just wish them, you know, goodwill, and may God bless them all.
Is Passover always the same time as Easter?
No, it's a little bit different.
Okay.
It has to do with the phases of the moon. It's very complicated, actually.
Well, I know Easter's always the first Sunday after the first full moon after the vernal equinox,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, what I do is I just look on the calendar for the next year.
Well, at the risk of being early, I'll say happy Easter.
Well, thank you.
Bishop Sticca.
Yeah, Frank, it's been a delight.
Thank you very much. This is the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. We'll talk to you again next Sunday.